This is Matt Wells at UN News. Well, with high-level meetings ongoing to address the climate and biodiversity crisis centre stage at UN headquarters, one of the Secretary-General's Youth Advisory Group members is urging world leaders to make sure their decisions get back to the people that help shape policy on the ground. Ernest Gibson is co-coordinator for 350 Fiji, a regional youth-led climate change network in the Pacific, driven by young climate leaders. And he told Julia Dean of our UN country team in Australia, it was important to let groups like his know that they've made a difference.
For me, there are three reasons why we should be continuing to engage young people. And the first reason is around young people are the only demographic that has the opportunity, the agency, and the capability to be able to respond really quickly and effectively to situations that need a response. In the Pacific, we see a really clear example when it comes to responding to natural disaster. You look at any cyclone that we've had over the last 10 years, any development sector agency that's worth their salt will tell you that young people have been at the forefront of driving the transformative change to ensure that the response to the crises was done effectively, ethically, and quickly. And so that's the first reason, is the reason we engage young people is because, without sounding too biased, we get the job done. But the second reason, and I think is perhaps more important, is because young people have the most vested interest in the way in which the future will pan out. We are in a really unique sort of nexus position where we have the ability to see the learnings from generations before us, but we also are the generation that will be guiding and creating the next generation through the next 35 to 50 years. So our interest is not just our own, but also the interest of ensuring that our children have a life that is something that is worthwhile and something that we would like for ourselves and for our children. And then, of course, the third reason is because youth will be the population that drives future innovation. So the reason that we work with youth now is not because we want them to feel cool and fancy and like social influences now. The reason we work with youth now is to ensure that we're laying down the foundation so that humanity and societies going forward have a fighting chance. Because at the end of the day, the leaders that we have now that are, you know, pushing retirement age won't be there 25 years from now to see their plans to fruition. So we need to be able to instill enough drive and capacity in young people to ensure that the future that we have is not just one that we want, but it's a reality.
With the biodiversity summit coming up in New York, do you talk to the elders and learn about the effects of climate change on biodiversity loss in Fiji?
I think you've raised probably one of the most important points that the climate warriors have discussed over the last 2 to 3 years. And it's around ensuring that conversations that we have are not just conversations between young people or conversations between policymakers or conversations between governments and key stakeholders, but actually conversations that are intergenerational and multi-stakeholder in every sense of those words. And so a lot of this is around how can we ensure that we're learning from past practices? How can we ensure that we pay tribute to the indigenous knowledge systems that already exist? And how can we use these to drive ourselves forward? So it's about looking back to ensure that we are going forward stronger and together. So in answer to your question, I suppose the short answer is yes, we're talking to each other all the time. And so this for me is really important.
And with the dual challenges in the Pacific where you are of COVID-19 and climate change, do you think that the young people can maintain the energy to rise to these challenges?
I'm not the most optimistic person in the world, but this is something where I can actually say I do think the answer to your question is yes. Because I've seen not just Pacific Islanders, but Pacific Island youth time and time again being able to be faced with some of the most difficult situations come out of these stronger. And there is a general recognition that despite how difficult the socioeconomic state in the Pacific currently is as a result of COVID-19, recognizing that we haven't had the health crisis, that many countries have had, but that we're facing a very different type of crisis. But even in the wake of this kind of disaster, I've seen youth, but also multiple layers of society coming together to recognize that, one, in order to get out of COVID-19, it means that we need to think of the world as something that we need to redesign. Recognizing that everything that we've done before this has not prepared us sufficiently to be able to take a shock as large as COVID-19. And that links in really clearly with some of the other things that climate warriors have been fighting for years, and that it's not just about reducing carbon emission targets, it's actually about overhauling a system that is fundamentally broken. And so I think if we are able to do this together, Absolutely, we can maintain the momentum because the goal is still the same. It's to change the system that doesn't work.
So your message to those that will be gathering in New York to discuss the effects of climate change on biodiversity and other areas that affect biodiversity, what would your message to the people gathered there from the climate warriors of the Pacific?
There are so many things that I would like to say, to be honest, but I think if I were to distill it into a couple of things, it would be first and foremost, find ways of ensuring that you are listening to communities and that communities are driving the work that you are doing. Because at the end of the day, anybody in the development sector must be working to ensure that we're bettering the lives of communities that we claim to serve. And the only way that we can do that is if we're listening to the communities themselves. So first message is find ways of ensuring that you're listening to communities, you're engaging communities in dialogue, but more importantly, you're going back to these same communities and explaining to them exactly what you did with the information that they provided you with. Demonstrate to them how they have influenced your processes. And the second one is include youth. And this isn't just youth alone. It's every other social demographic that often is left at the fringes of society. Include them in your beginning. Think about how does this affect youth? How does this affect persons with disabilities? How does this affect women and girls in rural communities? How does this affect people living in informal settlements? And then allow that to influence the next phase and then the next phase, and not just invite them to the big fancy event at the end. So those are my two things. Engage communities effectively and ethically. And secondly, engage youth and other social demographics from the beginning phase up until the end and not just at the end.